tonight is an opportunity for us to remember, to revisit these familiar scenes and look on them with fresh eyes. Maundy Thursday is when Jesus washed the feet of his disciples, when he gave them the command to love each other. On Maundy Thursday, Jesus reinterpreted the Jewish Passover meal as an indicator of his mission. Maundy Thursday is why we celebrate communion each time we gather. In some traditions, communion is not celebrated on Good Friday, because instead of looking at the symbols of Christ's death, we look at the story, we enter into the actual events. You were each offered communion as you entered the room tonight. It's for you to take when you're ready, whenever it's most meaningful for you. Some of you might wish to begin with communion as the meal was eaten before the events that we'll be looking at tonight. Some may wish to hold it until the end or take it at another point in our service. It's up to you when you choose to take the elements this evening. But whenever you take the bread and the juice, we take it as a somber participation in the death of Christ. If you wish to begin this evening with communion, you may do so now. If you want to wait, please take the next few moments to sit in silence, to breathe in and out, and prepare yourselves for our Good Friday service.
Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little further, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet, not as I will, but as you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour?" he asked Peter. "Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." Just as he was speaking, Judas, one of the 12, appeared. With him was a crowd armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests and teachers of the law and the elders. Now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them: "The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him and lead him away under guard." Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, "Rabbi," and kissed him. The men seized Jesus and arrested him.
It's the calm before the storm. The garden must have been so quiet when Jesus and his disciples wandered in. I can imagine the breeze gently wafting the sweet smell of olives through the air. The sound of crickets chirping back and forth, blissfully unaware of what was about to happen. No wonder the disciples fell asleep. It was peaceful there. And unlike Jesus, they didn't really know what was coming. Oh, he'd tried to warn them, but how could they have imagined what was about to take place? How could they have foreseen the betrayal of one of their own? The violent bloodlust of the crowd? The cruelty of the soldiers? There's just no way they could have known. And so they slept. And there is Jesus in agony, head buried in his arms, asking the Father one last time if there was any other way. Unlike when our minds wander and we lie awake with anxious thoughts, Jesus knew exactly what was coming. He wasn't imagining the worst, he was preparing for it. His breath must have been ragged and shallow. His heart must have been racing, his palms sweating. All the cruelty of humanity would be turned on him, and he saw it coming. And yet, for our sake, not my will, but your will be done.
Above all powers, above all kings, above all nature and all created things, above all wisdom and all the ways of man, you were here before the world began. Above all kingdoms, above all thrones, above all wonders the world has ever known, above all wealth and treasures of the earth, there's no way to measure what you're worth. Crucified, laid behind the stone, you lived to die, rejected and alone, like a rose trampled on the ground. You took the fall and thought of me above all, above all power, above all king, above all nature and all creating, above all wisdom and all the ways of man, you were there before the world began. Above all kingdoms, above all thrones, above all wonders the world has ever known, above all wealth and treasures of the earth, there's no way to measure what you're worth. Crucified, lay behind the stone, live to die, rejected and alone, like a rose trampled on the ground. You took the fall and thought of me above all. Crucified, rejected and alone, like a rose trampled on the ground. You took the fall and thought of me, like a rose trampled on the ground. You took the fall and thought of me.
At daybreak, the council of the elders of the people, both the chief priests and the teachers of the law, met together, and Jesus was laid before them. If you are the Messiah, they said, tell us. Jesus answered, if I tell you, you will not believe me, and if I asked you, you will not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the mighty God. They all asked, are you then the Son of God? He replied, you say that I am. Then they said, why do we need any more testimony? We have heard it from his own lips. Now, Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. You also were with Jesus of Galilee, she said. But he denied it before them all. I don't know what you're talking about, he said. Then he went out of to the gateway, where another servant girl saw him and said to the people there, this fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth. He denied it again with an oath. I don't know this man. After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away. Then he began to call down curses and swore to them, I don't know the man. Immediately, a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. And he went outside and wept bitterly.
All the disciples fled. They were terrified. They couldn't believe the high priests and religious leaders had actually arrested Jesus. Jesus had escaped from them before. How did they get him this time? Was it their fault? If only they hadn't fallen asleep in the garden, maybe they would have seen the mob coming and been able to warn Jesus and get him to safety. If only. Peter follows at a distance. He sees that they bring Jesus to the house of the high priest. They met in the inner courtyard of the house with Jesus, so Peter outside could just barely make out what was being said. Are you the Son of God? A quiet answer from Jesus that Peter couldn't quite make out. Then angry shouts. What else do we need to hear? More angry shouting. Peter was probably shaking, trying to figure out what he could do to save Jesus. He was the one who was always looking out for Jesus. He was the first to say that Jesus was the Messiah. He was always trying to protect Jesus, to help Jesus. And now, here he was, hopelessly outnumbered and without a plan. If only he hadn't fallen asleep. And as he listens to hear what will happen, someone notices him. Weren't you with Jesus on Sunday? When he came into Jerusalem, weren't you walking next to his donkey? Without thinking, the lie came. No, that wasn't me. Why did he do it? Was he that afraid? He was Peter. Peter who acted first and thought about the consequences later. Why would he lie about that? But before he has time to really think about it, someone else asks again. You're from Galilee too, aren't you? Aren't you one of Jesus' disciples? And again, involuntarily, he spits out the words, "No, I don't know him." What was wrong with him? What a coward he was. If only he was stronger. If only he hadn't fallen asleep. And then a third time, the question came, and all of his fear, all of his anger, all of his grief, it all came pouring out in an angry outburst of curse words. "I don't know him. Leave me alone." And as he's catching his breath from his angry outburst, he hears another sound. It cuts through the night as it pierces his heart, a rooster. And the sound sends him back to earlier that evening, to Jesus' prediction that Peter would deny him. Peter thought he was brave, a warrior, Jesus' protector. But he fell asleep when Jesus needed a guard. He fled when Jesus needed a friend, and here he was, lying to save his own skin, while Jesus was put on trial for telling the truth. And all he can think is, "If only I hadn't fallen asleep." And then came the hot flood of tears.
Who is like you, Lord of heaven and earth? There is none who can compare. Pearl of greatest price, who is like do anything, spend
Morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin made their plans. So they bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. "Are you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate. "You have said so," Jesus replied. The chief priests accused him of many things. So again, Pilate asked him, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they are accusing you of." But Jesus made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate, knowing it was out of self-interest that the chief priest had handed him Jesus over. But the chief priest stirred up the crowd to have Pilate released Barabbas instead. "What shall I do then with the one you call the king of the Jews?" Pilate asked them. "Crucify him," they shouted. "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him!" Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. The soldiers led Jesus away into the palace, that is, the praetorium, and called together the whole company of soldiers. They put a purple robe on him. They twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on him. They began to call out to him, "Hail, King of the Jews." Again and again, they struck him on the head with a staff and spit on him. Falling on their knees, they paid homage to him. And when they had mocked him, they took off the purple robe and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him out to crucify him.
It was so cruel. It was so unfair. Such an obvious miscarriage of justice. Pilate knew Jesus was innocent. He knew that Jesus was only on trial because of the jealousy of the religious leaders. But he cared more about his position of power than about the administration of real justice. So he pretended like it wasn't his call. Pretended like he had no power to put an end to this farce of a trial. Tried to do the right thing until it looked like the right thing would cost him. And the soldiers, they mocked him. They spit on his holy skin. They slapped the face of God. Pushed thorns into the very flesh of God. It was a lynching. Atrocities committed as entertainment for a depraved crowd. With each blow, the crowd jeered louder. Each soldier tried to one-up the others. More insults, more beatings. A purple cloth to mock the would-be king. a twisted branch of thorns cruelly pressed into his flesh, the flesh of God. And Jesus could have stopped it. He was no mere overpowered victim. He was God in the flesh. He could have called down thousands of angels to put a stop to it. He didn't have to endure such brutality. Even as the perfect sacrifice, even as the fulfillment of the Old Testament sacrificial system, there was no need for the violence. Lambs were not taunted before their death as a sacrifice. Bulls were not beaten and tortured before being burned on the altar. It was so unfair and so wrong and so unnecessary. But Jesus willingly endured. He endured so that in the darkest nights of our souls, we would know we have a Savior who understands. Jesus endured so that when we face the worst of humanity, we know he understands. That he has been there. Jesus understands abuse. Jesus understands cruelty. Jesus understands injustice. He has experienced them all. He endured so that not only would we have a Savior, but so that we would know that we have a Savior who can relate to our worst pain. How amazing. How overwhelming. What strength. What love.
Thank you.
As soon as the chief priests and the officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." But they shouted, "Take him away! Take him away! Crucify him!" "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priests answered. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. So the soldiers took charge of Jesus. Carrying his own cross, he went out to the place of the skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha.
The day has just started. It's 9 a.m. and a huge crowd has gathered at Pilate's house to see what's going on with Jesus' trial. The religious leaders knew they needed to get Pilate to sentence Jesus early in the day before he and his elite friends finished their work for the day by lunchtime. Jesus has been bound since the night before. He's probably not slept. He's been cruelly beaten and mocked by the Roman soldiers. But the religious leaders aren't done. They won't be happy until Jesus is dead on a cross. A cross, that would be a clear signal to Jesus' followers that he was nothing more than a common criminal. The religious leaders are so filled with hate, so desperate to see Jesus killed that they prostrate themselves to Pilate. "We have no king but Caesar," they say. What a profoundly ignorant statement. As the people of God who were waiting for the king from God, and they schemed against the very one they had been waiting for. No king but Caesar. And this from the most religious, from the chief priests, this from the people who were supposed to be the best at paying attention to what God was up to. The people who most hated Rome and all it stood for. But the enemy of their enemy have become their friend. And willing to do whatever it took to end the life of Jesus, the religious leaders aligned themselves with the corrupt state. How desperate they must have been. How frantically they grasped at the power they had. They couldn't allow Jesus to keep showing them up, to keep condemning them, to keep drawing bigger crowds than him, than them. And so the phrase, "We have no king but Caesar." And the King of Kings picks up his cross and begins to walk.
Change. stand in him complete. Jesus died my soul to save. My lips shall still repeat. Jesus paid it all. All to him I owe. Sin had left a crimson stain.
Two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. When they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him there along with the criminals, one on his right, the other on his left. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. People stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, "He saved others. Let him save himself, if he is God's Messiah, the chosen one." The soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar and said, "If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself." There was a written notice above him which read, "This is the king of the Jews."
Father, forgive them. After he was beaten cruelly by soldiers, Father, forgive them. After he was betrayed by the very priests of God's people, Father, forgive them. As the crown of thorns pressed into his head, Father, forgive them. As the nails pierced his hands and his feet in unimaginable pain, Father, forgive them. As he breathed shallow, excruciating breaths, Father, forgive them. As the soldiers entertained themselves by playing games for his clothes, Father, forgive them. As the bystanders watched, Father, forgive them. As they offered vinegar to quench his thirst, Father, forgive them. As they mocked his true identity, Father, forgive them. As Jesus died to save us, we mocked him. As Jesus provided our way back to God, we sneered. Like spoiled children, we demanded our way and then killed the Son of God when he didn't align with our expectations. And the sign reads, "The King of the Jews." If only they understood.
Now wounded, what grief and shame weighed down. Now scornfully surrounded with thorns, thine only crown. O sacred head, what glory, what bliss till now was thine. Yet though despised and gory, I joy to call thee mine. What thou, my Lord, hast suffered was all for sinner's gain. My sin was the transgressions, but thine the deadly pain. Lo, here for my Savior, that I deserve thy praise. Look on me with thy favor, vouchsafe for me thy grace. Thy joy can ne'er be spoken above all joys beside. When in thy body broken, I thus with safety hide. O Lord of life, desiring thy glory now to see. Beside thy cross expiring. Beside thy cross expiring. I breathe my soul to thee. I breathe my soul to thee.
One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. "Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us." But the other criminal rebuked him. "Don't you fear God?" he said. "Since you are under the same sentence, we are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Jesus answered him, "Truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother's sister Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to her, "Woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, this disciple took her into his home.
Even on the cross, even in a kind of pain I cannot fathom, Jesus is thinking of others. He comforts the criminal who has faith. "Today you will be with me in paradise." This man who by his own admission deserves the death he's experiencing. This man who made all the wrong choices. This man with no time to get baptized, no time to visit the temple. This man with nothing going for him but the knowledge that he needs Jesus' help. Jesus is, even in pain, welcoming the outcasts into his kingdom. And he's thinking of his mother. I cannot begin to imagine the horror and heartbreak of this for Mary. To lose a child at all is devastating, life-altering, crushing. But to watch your child viciously abused, beaten, whipped, mocked, slapped. To listen as the nails go through your son's hands and feet. To hear the hammer strike the nail as your son cries out in agony, and to know there is nothing you can do to stop it. How could anyone survive that pain? How could a mother ever recover? And Jesus, as both her son and her creator, he knows how hard this is for her. And so from the cross, while he is suffering, while he is in pain, he makes sure that Mary has community, that she has support, that she is well cared for, not only today, but for the rest of her life. Who does that? Nobody but Jesus. He endured all this pain, and while he endured the pain, he was thinking about us. The book of Hebrews says that Jesus endured the cross because of the joy set before him. His death brought us life, and so he endured. While he was on the cross, we were on his mind. I wonder if he looked ahead while he hung there, if he looked ahead to the future and saw all of us. I wonder if he knew how many times we'd mess up, how many times his church would fail. And I wonder if he looked even further to the end of all things, when the work he would begin on the cross would be completed once and for all. When the sin he defeated on the cross would finally surrender. Where the shame that he took on his body would once and for all stop reaching out for you and me. And so as he looked ahead, he saw joy. He knew that his death would make way for so much life. And so from the cross, thinking about you and me, Jesus endured. From the cross, he cared for us. From the cross, he loved us.
Washed white.
It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. For the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." When he had said this, he breathed his last. The centurion, seeing what had happened, praised God and said, "Surely this was a righteous man." When all the people who had gathered to witness this sight saw what took place, they beat their breasts and went away. But all those who knew him, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance watching these things. As evening approached, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who had himself become a disciple of Jesus. Going to Pilate, he asked for Jesus' body, and Pilate ordered that it be given to him. Joseph took the body, wrapped it in a clean linen cloth, and placed it on his own new tomb that he had cut out of the rock. He rolled a big stone in front of the entrance of the tomb and went away. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were sitting there opposite the tomb.